Okay. Sorry, I was a bit late. I was running late and rushing, which after last week is not a good idea. But anyway, that's what I did. So, just a little bit of a review from last week, first of all. Last week we talked about rushing and we explained the problem. But we also explained that there is a concept in Judaism called zrizut. I'm not going to go through the whole thing now, of course, but the idea of being quick, alacrity, not procrastinating. So explain how the two things come together. And we talked a bit about this idea called zrizut bimtinut, which is calm alacrity, which means never rushing, always being fully present in everything that we're doing, but at the same time, not procrastinating and not wasting time. So understanding the value of time, and that when we finish doing something, we use the time properly and we get to things not by putting them off. But when we're doing them, we're fully present and not rushing. Also, the idea is that when we do that, when we become present, we also develop the ability that when necessary, we could rush. But in other words, because when we need something, we create a certain sense of urgency. And that idea of zrizut also means that when you need to, you can do things quickly, but with some level of presence. Okay. Before we go on to today, I want to just make a couple of announcements. This is the time of the year where we make lots of announcements. So we're actually going to finish this series. Besides today, we've got two more to do. I'll do them both next week because they are connected a little bit. So that will end the series for this particular topic. But then in 2 weeks' time, we're going to have, I sent out a broadcast, you might have noticed. It's a big accomplishment. I've actually got Dina to agree to speak a little bit. We're going to, because I thought before the new year, she'll inspire you better than I will. So I'll say something as well, but she'll speak. It's a big thing. She might have forgotten that I got into this, by the way, but... But she never goes back on her words, so it's okay, she'll do it. No. Good point. I better know today that she prepared for the next 2 weeks. But we do something special. It's the last Thursday lecture. It's not the last Thursday before Rosh Hashanah, but I'm not doing one just before Rosh Hashanah, because that's like a day and a half before Rosh Hashanah. I'm preparing drashas, and you're preparing big meals, I'm assuming. We'll do it in 2 weeks' time. That's the 3rd of September. Please spread the word. We're going to have a coffee cart. We'll have some special Rosh Hashanah foods. We'll make it an inspirational morning in preparation for the new and special and great year ahead. We're calling it courage and hope. That's what we need to come into the new year with a lot of courage and a lot of hope. So that's what we're going to do. Also, I don't have them here. They should arrive hopefully before the end of today's class. But I did speak about last week that I'm going to do a WhatsApp, daily WhatsApp, which will start in about a week and a half. But this time I'm doing it also connected to Elul and Rosh Hashanah, but I'm going to connect it with the legacies of light, which I spoke about last week, where every day we're going to there's a calendar, you can take the calendar home today, where I've forgotten the date, but from the 17th of Elul, every day is dedicated to another fallen soldier. We're going to do this till the end of Sukkot, till Shmini Atzeret, which is the yahrzeit of all those people that fell in. There's something to learn from each soldier, which we'll go through, that's in the calendar, and we'll just elaborate it a bit and also maybe connect it to the time of year that we're in. So I'll send it all out again on a broadcast, but you can have your actual calendar today if it makes it here within the next 45 minutes. Hopefully it will. Then, of course, there's lots of other things happening. We've got the second day of Rosh Hashanah. We've got the in Vaucluse address is almost confirmed. Also the Sukkot morning tea, and so on and so forth. Okay. So today we're doing the one that when I was in Melbourne on this retreat where I learned this stuff, this is the one that most people got up when that was announced. That was like the majority. And that's PO, which is pleasing others. Right, so a lot of people are, Stan, come in. Pleasing others, which is, many people are, in fact, even those that didn't stand up, it's just because they had their highest score on something else, but everyone had a fairly high score on this one because we tend to do that. It's kind of the default human position to want to please others. Which, to begin with, can be a big saboteur. Why is that? Anyone? Why? Sorry?
All externally driven.
It's externally driven, correct? But how does it
it can be expensive itself.
Right, so it can be expensive yourself.
Yeah.
Something I'm sure you know I'm going to talk about a little bit later. What that means. What else?
Is the question
why is people pleasing a bad thing? How can it be a saboteur? In other words, how does it prevent us from behaving and producing and achieving properly?
Well, you don't look at yourself. You don't look at what really you achieve.
Right.
You're too busy helping
the world. Okay.
It can be at your own detriment.
It can be at your own detriment, but it can also be a detriment to others. For example, it can be the inability to be assertive when needed, right? Because we're too scared to speak up. It also means that, in the same sort of context, it means that people who always are prone to pleasing others, they will stay away quite emphatically sometimes from tension or conflict. And that's actually, I know, and sometimes it's the name of peace and all that kind of stuff, but actually it's not a good idea. Conflict is important, and we all have conflict. It doesn't have to be bad conflict. It doesn't have to be aggressive conflict. It has to be managed properly, but withdrawing from tension or conflict is actually not a good thing, right? And also in creativity, very often, this is what they have here, which is a good point. It can also lose the sense of self in a team. In other words, like when you're part of a team, you don't want to be like put forward your ideas. You don't want to put forward your creativity or your special way or your unique contribution because you're always scared about maybe it's in conflict with someone else's. And therefore, you stay back, which is a problem, right? So all these things are true. And I'm picking up from what you just said is that the main problem seems to be that it'll be at your own expense. You won't take care of yourself, which is all true. Now, in this, I just want to share with you something actually from 2 weeks ago, the Parsha. Last Shabbat. Where there's a famous commentary from the Kli Yakar. Kli Yakar lived in the time of the Maharal of Prague. He was a rabbi in Prague after the Maharal. And he makes a beautiful comment. There's a mitzvah in the Torah there, which is to appoint a king, right? When the Jews came to the land of Israel, they were supposed to eventually conquer the whole land, then appoint a king, and then build the Beit HaMikdash, which is what happened. It took a long time because it took a long time until they conquered Jerusalem. It was like 300 years after, more than 300 years after they've arrived in Israel. Excuse me, then they appointed a king, which was King Saul. Actually, there was one more thing. Then King Saul was supposed to destroy the nation of Amalek, which is one of the mitzvot in the Torah. He kind of did it, but he didn't do it completely. Hence, they never got destroyed. That will be when Mashiach comes. But and then he built it, and then the temple had to be built, which was built by the next king, which was King David. So the Kli Yakar asks a fascinating question. The Torah tells us there's a mitzvah to appoint a king. And yet, when the first king was appointed, King Saul, and we read about it was the time of the prophet Samuel, who was sort of more the spiritual leader, the Jews came to King Samuel and said, you know, it's time for a king. Give us a king. Tzna lanu melech, give us a king. And Samuel was upset with that request, and so was God. But yet, because the people asked, so God said, I'll give you a king. In other words, like the system till then wasn't good enough, like there was a prophet, there was spiritual leadership. It seemed that it wasn't an appropriate request. And yet, last week's parsha, there's a mitzvah to appoint a king. So eventually you're going to have a king. I mean, King David, we know, was a great king, and we still hope for the continuation of the King David dynasty, which will happen when Mashiach comes. Mashiach will be a king. So the whole concept is a Torah concept. So what's the problem? And he says an amazing thing. He says you have to look at the language very carefully, right? In the Torah, it says that there will come a time where you will request Asima alai melech, place on me a king, impose on me a king, right? Whereas in the Samuel story, they came and they said, give us a king. What's the difference? So he says very interestingly, this is 400 years ago, and the way he talks about it, which is, nothing much changed. He said there's two kinds of leaders. It can be rabbinic leadership, it can be political leadership. He says there's a kind of leadership where people need a leader, but they want it for themselves. So they say, give us a king. We'll tell him how to lead. We'll tell him what to do. We'll tell him what policies he must make. And he will depend on us. And he will be that kind of person that'll be a people pleaser. So you want to be popular, and he'll pursue popularity, and he'll give in to whatever, whether it's rude, whether it's good, whether it's not good, whether it's right, whether it's wrong. God wasn't happy with that request. Because a leader has to be assertive. A leader has to know how to stand up sometimes. He has to be kind, compassionate, considerate, but also strong. And that's why if you look at the Parsha's request, it says differently. It doesn't say they say, give us a king. They say, place a king upon us. In other words, as a symbol, it's got to be a good king. It's got to be a righteous king. And the king has all kinds of laws where he has to stay humble and remember that he's under God and so on and so forth. In fact, the Torah, it's an amazing thing. The Torah actually, you know, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to write a Torah scroll. You know, one of the 613 mitzvahs. We don't do it today because today, for all sorts of various reasons, because the purpose of that mitzvah is to study, and today we have books to study, and therefore it's a mitzvah to buy Jewish books and things like that. But when it came to the king, there was a mitzvah for the king to write an additional Torah and a small Torah, and he was supposed to carry that Torah with him wherever he went. Why? To not to corrupt him, because the king has his own challenges. The power can corrupt. And therefore he always has to remember that he has to be humble before God, and he's under God's jurisdiction. And his job is to enforce the Torah values upon the people, not to push his own agenda, right? Okay, so that's true. But for the people, God says, you gotta ask for a king that you can actually respect and accept him as an authority. And that's the difference. But I'm just saying that because as I was preparing this, I reminded myself of this idea, because that's the concept, that people who always please others cannot really be true leaders, because they can never stand up when they need to stand up, right? And generally we know that, as you said, it's very external. Why is it external? Because when we people please, it's because we define ourselves. We've spoken about this a lot in the past. We're going to just try and do some other ideas today. But you're defining yourself by the perception of others. And that's not the way a person is supposed to live. You're supposed to live in a way where you define yourself by who you are, by your values. The values which God gives us, of course, values of selflessness, values of compassion, values of kindness. But they have to come from within. They have to be what I am, not what someone else is expecting me, or I perceive that someone else expecting me to do, because that doesn't lead to anything valuable. And what it does is it leads to a negative self-worth. We put ourselves down. We have the inability, therefore, to grow. We have inability also to take criticism, which is a problem, because actually criticism is a good thing when it's taken constructively, when we can learn from it. Doesn't mean it always has to be true. We have to be able to be honest about that, but it's okay to make a mistake. And it just makes us people that don't have an identity. A whole identity is what the people around me are expecting. They could be expecting good things, they could be expecting bad things, and therefore it's not a good idea. Also, it becomes an obsessive thing. Like, you know, I saw an article that talks about this a lot, which is the people-pleasing often, because it comes from such a deep insecurity, it creates a person that's always seeking validation. And what's happened nowadays with that is a very interesting concept, is that people need validation not only from other people around them, but online. It's become a huge thing where people post something online and then the whole success of the post is how many likes it has, right? So that could be a problem. So then you start creating content which has nothing to do with what's effective content or what's good content or what's healthy content. You create content what's going to bring more popularity, right? We see this in individuals. We see this in very big influences where they just do stuff that could be completely false and terrible and disgusting and evil, only because it gets them a bigger following, right? I mean, this is, I've sort of read about this very interesting stuff, like the Candace Owens of the world Tucker Carlson's of the world have huge followings, absolutely huge followings, which drives most of their content, even though it's anti-Semitic and it's false and it's disgusting and it's conspiracy theorists and all this kind of stuff, but that's what happens, right? Because you do what's going to bring more following other than being, I'm going to do something that I hope people will like, but that's not what's driving it. What's driving it is the truth and the honesty, right? And that's a real problem. And also a problem where people sort of go back on their social media, on their TikTok or their Instagram or Facebook and keep checking, like, how many people have liked this, how many people have read this, and so on and so forth, needing other people's validation, right? Which then, in turn, what it does is it actually even affects their kindness. Because sometimes people pleasing people can be very kind, and kindness is always a good thing. We never negate kindness. Kindness is good. But at the end of the day, when kindness is a part of your own ego, it's a problem. Because it's always driven by the ego, and therefore it's not always done correctly. Right? And when people do that, what happens is then the kindness that they do... Thanks. Thank you so much. The kindness that they do is a kindness which is driven by self. It's because they need to be validated. So it's not coming... Thanks so much. So it's not coming from a place of selflessness. It's not coming from a place of humility. It's coming actually from an insecurity, which is the same thing as an ego. In other words, the preservation and the protection of self, which are all not good things, and it creates anxiety a lot of the time. People please are often very, very anxious because it's all about what people will think. And like you said before, it often comes at the expense of self. We dilute ourselves, we disappear, and we actually affects functionality and calmness and values a lot of times because it's all driven by the anxiety of always making sure that people should perceive me as a good thing, right? Which is all... that's what we're going to talk about. That's the rest of the thing. So correct. How do you balance that? And the answer is, it's not about balance. It's about values, like we've been doing the last few weeks. All these things that can be good and bad, they're bad when they're driven by egocentricity or insecurity or a sense of self, over sense of self. But if they're driven by values, then they become completely different. So stay with me, and we're going to, at the end, you'll understand how this also becomes a balance, right? With the concept that we've spoken about many times, that although this is all true, and a lot of modern literature is about fixing this in the direction of, you've got to put yourself first, you've got to make sure you take care of yourself, all the things that you know I love, like I am enough, which is not true, we're never enough. I'm worthy, yes, I like that, but not I'm enough. Doesn't resonate with me exactly. I've discovered my own authentic self, my true authentic self, which I never know what that means. Is it your true authentic animal soul or your true authentic godly soul? I'm not sure. I never know what it means. My suggestion is that most often when they say that, it means the animal self. And also, by the way, it's not fixing the problem. I haven't read anywhere the statistics that levels of anxiety have gone down and people are less people-pleasing. I actually don't think that's true. More selfish, yes, but not. That actually hasn't actually intrinsically fixed the problem. And there's becoming this in the name of self-care, which is a good thing, by the way, and I'm going to talk about it, right? Of course we've got to take care of ourselves, just in what context is the issue. It's not about the balance, it's about where it's coming, what's driving it. That's what we're going to talk about in a second. It just bred tremendous self-absorption. That's where we're up to today. It's just tremendous self-absorption. All in the name of, I've got to put myself first, and I've got to take care of myself, and so on. A cute little story about that just happened a few weeks ago. I went with Rav Shua Solomon, the two of us, went up to Counterpoint. You all know what Counterpoint is. We did a session there. And the session was an interesting session. It was about sexuality, about relationships, and so on. And we both presented different sides. Not different sides, but like different aspects, different components. And I spoke about relationships. And as I've done many times, I talked about the myth that relationships are driven only by love. And I talked about selfish love and selfless love. And therefore, I explained to them in a brief nutshell of how the basis of relationship is respect. And respect actually means the ability to put yourself, to make room for other people and to put other people first sometimes and to respect others and so on. We've done this session a few times over the years, and normally there's a lot of great questions. And it's normally around the Jewish view of sexuality and marriage. And this time was also that, but the first question was very telling. Very telling of our generation. Very, very great kid. But first question was, yes, but what about respect for yourself? Like there was this anxiety all of a sudden that, God forbid, I was suggesting that we put other people before us, you know what I'm saying? Like, but what's about respect for yourself? Okay. Anyways, so it is true So first of all, like this, on a very basic level, self-absorption is never a good thing, and disregarding what other people, in other words, yes, obsessing with people-pleasing is a terrible thing, but disregarding other people's perception is also a terrible thing. The Pirkei Avot, I've mentioned this many times, tells us that the noble way of behaving is to do things that are honorable for you and bring consent and honor from other people as well. Why? Because we don't live in our own world, that's first of all. We don't live in our own world. We live with people. And also we have to consider the perceptions and the perception of others, because we have to consider making people or not making people upset, right? And we have to also consider that we don't facilitate people's, like if we can help it, if we can do something, you know, the Torah says, "V'asita ha'tova yashar," you shall do what's good and just, right? And in the eyes of people. So the Talmud explains that it's not good enough just to do what's right. You mustn't compromise right, but sometimes you also have to make sure and put in a little bit of extra effort to make sure that you explain things to other people, or you do it in such a way where people understand that it's right. Otherwise, you know, I don't care what people think, I'm just doing what's right, right? That's great, but if you bring criticism of other people, you're facilitating negativity, you're facilitating other people's negative feelings towards you, which isn't a good thing. We have to help each other be kind. We have to help each other be respectful and compassionate. So there is, number one, even in Judaism, there's a concept where we actually do consider what other people think, but not obsessively. It doesn't drive us completely. It's not the basis of what we do, but it's certainly a consideration, right? Okay, that's number one. But I want to take this deeper and go back to the story that I said and everything else that's going on today, and actually turn this whole thing on its head. Because it's actually a fundamental mistake. The whole thing's a fundamental mistake. Not that we shouldn't take care of ourselves. Of course we have to take care of ourselves. But actually, that's not the purpose of creation. Right? I know not everyone thinks that. But the purpose of creation is not to take care of ourselves. How do I know that? Because it's a verse in Tehillim, and the Talmud talks about it. Right? A phrase which you mentioned a number of times. Not to take care of ourselves. We have to take care of ourselves, but that's not the goal of creation. You'll see what I mean in a minute. That's not the purpose of existence. What is the purpose of existence? In the words of King David, Olam chesed yibaneh. The world was built on kindness. It was built on kindness, compassion, giving, right? The world was built in order to give, which also means you have to receive. We've talked about this. But actually, what is the purpose? In fact, in the 7 days of creation, which correspond to the 7 emotional sefirot that we've talked about so many times, what's the first one? Chesed. Chesed is number one. It's the day one. Do you need gevurah? Of course you need gevurah. Gevurah can mean boundaries. Gevurah can mean sometimes not giving, holding back when necessary, not giving irresponsibly, not giving when it's inappropriate. But it comes second. Why does it come second? Because the basis, the Zohar says this, right? Why is Chesed not day one? Why is Chesed Sunday? Because Chesed the Azil im Kulhu Yomin, says the Zohar, Chesed must accompany every single other attribute. The goal of every attribute is to give. God did this himself when he created. The existence was only God before this world, and God, so to speak, made space for something else. He made space to have a relationship. He makes space for people who are not godly by default. And he made space for them so he should be able to give them. He should be able to give a world to them, right? And because the basis of creation is selflessness, actually, it's about giving, it's about taking care of others, it's about making space for others, it's about being humble enough to make room for other people and so on. That's why it's the only experience that can actually bring a person calmness and purpose and happiness at the end, right? I don't know if you remember, he was just here again. We had a Thursday morning once when I interviewed someone, Rabbi Levi Shmatkin, who was the author of the book Letters for Life, right? Just for those, just to refresh your memory, Letters for Life is an amazing book. It's a collection of, I mean, he researched thousands of letters of the Lubavitcher Rebbe on emotional well-being, right? And then created them into chapters, different topics, and so on. And very, very well done. And he wrote the book, and we had a discussion here, if you remember. He He was just here recently. I did a discussion with him with the young adults, the Kayemet program. And then I put it, if you're interested, listen to it. I put it on the JP show that me and Levi do every week. It's part, one of the podcasts. And this time he told a very beautiful story. So sorry, before I tell the story, essentially, if you look at all these hundreds and thousands of letters of the Rebbe and then condensed and categorized in this book, a theme emerges. A theme emerges is that, obviously, unless one is completely dysfunctional with clinical mental illness and needs to go to a professional right away, of course, it's different. But in general, when people struggle with their emotional health, right, and they struggle with all kinds of, whether it's depression or anxiety, you know, with a small a and a small d, or it's any other area of loneliness or unhappiness and so on, there are a few key themes that the Rebbe would always drive. One of the main ones was, stop being so into yourself, go do for others. Do something for other people. And there's stories in the book about amazing things that people were just wallowing and sort of turning inward to be very, very busy with their challenges. The Rebbe says, why don't you take a break and go do something for other people? Go volunteer, go do a mitzvah, go do something for God, for other people, for something other than you, and the you will become stronger. And it's very understandable because Olam Chesed Yibaneh, that's the purpose of creation. That's the design of creation. That's the DNA of creation. To give, Chesed. Yeah.
I've always had a problem with the word selflessness because it kind of, there's no room there for self-care.
So we'll see, you'll see. Hopefully by the end of today, you'll be okay with it. Hopefully by the end of today, you'll be okay with it. I hope. If not, tell me. Okay. Right. Because, so in fact, one of the things in our book, there's one chapter, and I've read many letters myself of the Rebbe on this topic, where the Rebbe says that sometimes, like if you have these ruminating thoughts that are bothering you, like just try to think of something else. Like just distract yourself, like from these thoughts and just stop thinking about them. Just what we call Hesa Chadas, to pivot. Pivot is something else. It could be about a nice tree you've seen, whatever, just something. Stop ruminating, right? And in fact, there's one letter where the Rebbe writes to someone about who was having this, I don't know, he was having ruminations and he was ruminating and he was busy with himself and he was all about his challenges and his problem. And the Rebbe said to him, what I want you to do is not just to distract yourself from your thoughts, but actually for about a year, just distract yourself from yourself altogether. Like stop, just leave yourself alone for a bit so that you don't become self-absorbed, right? So a story that he told was a beautiful story. And just to illustrate the point. He said he got a call from a kindergarten teacher who had read the book. And the story was as follows, that she started a kindergarten. She was an educationalist and wanted to start like an early learning center and all that. And she wanted to do it right according to all the modern theories and, you know, the up-to-date educational theories and all that kind of stuff. So she wanted to include in the curriculum something that's very common today about emotional training, emotional social training, which the way it's done, which is not a bad thing, but the way it's done is bad. The way it's done is that every time a child's upset or every time something's happened, not just you validate it, obviously, you don't dismiss children, but there's a whole process like, are you in touch with your feelings? What are you feeling? Are you feeling sad? Are you feeling angry? Feeling jealous? Are you feeling nervous? Are you feeling anxious? Normally they talk to kids about things they've never heard of, like you plant in them things, emotions that they never even understood. So she did this full on, and then very, very sense of self, and they used to have this portrait day where everyone built a portrait of themselves and then how they're feeling, all this kind of stuff, right? And it wasn't working. She just felt it wasn't working. She didn't know why, but she didn't feel the kids were being particularly kind. She didn't feel that she'd made more healthier children. She just didn't feel it was working. Good on her, good intuition. And then she read the book, and she understood what she called, there's another way of doing this, right? And what she called a third way. In other words, not completely negating yourself, but not being busy with yourself all day, right? And she did two things. She told a story and she said it unbelievably changed everything. First thing she did was she kept the portrait day. But instead, what she did was that everyone had to do a portrait of someone else. Instead of drawing a picture of themselves, they had to draw a picture of another child and describe the child, maybe even describe what the child was, what was happening with that child, right? That was one thing. And they said it was amazing. Like just, it had like an almost instant transformation. just when you started training children to be more in tune with others, or if you're going to be in tune with feelings, to be in tune with others' feelings rather than yourself, it just was transformative.
I'm sorry, Rabbi. My
mom's got it. Oh, sure, no problem. Yeah. So that was one thing. The second thing she did was she always tried to bring in doing for others. So she gave a beautiful example that there was these days they used to have dancing. I don't know, dancing in different circles, and some kids, and they would dance with like a musical thing, a shaker, and like a, you know, shake it like a musical shaker. And there were blue ones and red ones, and they would give them a mat. And this one kid had a tantrum because there was no more blue ones, and he wanted a blue one, she wanted a blue one, not a red one. Big tantrum, right? So she said, in the past, what she would have done is, she sat down the child, what are you feeling? How are you feeling? Are you sad? She said, she validated the child, I can see this is hard for you, but can you do me a favor? She said to the child, you know, in that corner over there, I see there's two or three kids that aren't dancing, they feel left out. Can you go and dance with them and make sure they feel part of the thing? And the kid went, and they were amazingly happy, right? Yeah. This is good old Viktor Frankl stuff. You have to live a life of meaning, and meaning means giving. Meaning always means, even in the different examples that Viktor Frankl gives for what meaning means, and they're not always religion, but it always means something other than yourself, something higher than yourself. It could be religion, which is God. It could be healthy relationships, which means giving room for other people. It could be being productive, getting out of your comfort zone and working hard at a job, whatever the case is, but it's beyond your comfort zone, beyond your wallowing in yourself, right? And this is really what it's about. That's what the world was created for. And yes, there were great people who lived fully that way. So we don't have to ignore self, but the goal is selflessness. You'll see why in a second. There was a great Hasid, a great Hasidic Jew who I have mentioned many times because he just embodied so many of these things. That's why I always quote him. His name was Reb Mendel Futterfuss. I've mentioned him a few times. He was the most selfless person. He had a very healthy self, by the way. It wasn't like he ignored himself. He never ate or slept or anything, but he was very comfortable with himself, but he was just a selfless human being. And he spent many, many years in Siberia and Russia and then came out and had a tragedy and he was the happiest person ever. Lost a daughter, whatever. But so how did he land up in Siberia in Russia? So I don't know if you know this background. And he was a person who's his whole life he was imbued with Torah values and Hasidic values, and this was his life, right? And part of that life was just doing for others and helping others. This was his thing. So I don't know if you know that after the war, there was this window of opportunity for Jews to leave Russia. It was almost impossible to leave then, and to live as a Jew then was almost impossible too. So it was like terrible. And there was a window of opportunity because what happened in the war was a lot of Polish people had landed up in Russia. And the communists in Russia didn't mind if they go back to Poland, so maybe they didn't want them there, I don't know exactly, but there was this window of opportunity that if you have a Polish passport, you can leave. So within different communities, and one being Reb Mendel Futterfuss's very Hasidic community that he was involved in, they started this thing, and many people got out this way. There was a whole wave of people that came out. They came out on false Polish passports, right? Which was completely legitimate because it was absolutely a danger to remain in Russia, especially as a Jew. And they did this. But if you got caught, you were in big, big, big trouble. That's what it was. So he made many, many, he was involved in many, many of these escape opportunities. He sent his family abroad as well, and many, many other Hasidim, many people that he knew from his community. And someone asked him, so why don't you just do it yourself? Like, just do it and get out of here. He says, and when everyone's got out, I'll get out also. I'm waiting till the end. And the Russians got wind of it, and they started being more careful. And at the very, very end, when he had almost sent out everyone, he got caught. And he sat in Siberia for many years. I think it was over maybe 10 to 15 years, I'm not sure. And came out unbelievably strong. Long story of different things. There's a little story, I think I've told you this, where he told over later that when he, that, you know, the Baal Shem Tov says, from everything you can learn a lesson. So one time there was, there were other people in Siberia and different Russians that got sent for different political reasons, for all sorts of reasons. So one day they were sitting around, there was one guy, he says, you know, we've got some time now, we're not working, I'll do a show for you, because when I was before the war, I was a tightrope walker, right? So okay, so they found a piece of string, they tied it to two trees, and he's doing it. He did it, and it was amazing, everyone was clapping, it was fantastic. So Mendel Futterfass went over to him afterwards, and he says, what's the secret? He said to him, the secret is, when you get up there, I wouldn't try this anyway, but even if you know the secret, but if you get up there, you don't look right, you don't look left, you look towards the goal. That's the secret, right? And Mendel says, this was for him, this was a great lesson, and he lived with this. One of the things he lived with and got him through was this guy. Because the Baal Shem Tov says, from everything you have to learn, so he says, I didn't look right, I looked at the goal, one day I'll be out, I'll be able to live again properly, freely as a Jew, where I want. He did whatever he could in Siberia, but it was a tough existence, right? Why did this happen to him? Because he put others first. And if you would ask him, absolutely, without a question, does he regret not leaving earlier? He would say, absolutely not. Because he lived for others. He lived to give to others. Right? Now, we're not on Reb Mendel Futterfass's level. Of course not. And we probably wouldn't do that. I mean, I can speak for myself. Maybe you would. But, right? And it's a very, very high level. But even when things are a very high level, we may not get there, but we can at least develop that philosophy and aspire to be more selfless than we are. And with that, I want to share with you a beautiful idea. I think I've shared this with you before, but I'm going to share with you again because it's something that I think about a lot, an idea that I once heard on Pirkei Avot. So on Pirkei Avot, it says that there are different types of people. One person says, Shali shalach v'shalach shalach. What is mine is yours, and what is yours is yours. Well, whatever, what is mine belongs to you. Real selflessness, right? Says the Pirkei Avot, Hareze Chassid. That's a true righteous person. Righteous person, Chassid. Then it goes the opposite extreme, and someone says, what yours is mine, what's mine is mine. That's a wicked person. Okay, that's just an egocentric person. Okay. Then the Pirkei Avot says the following. If I say what's mine is yours, sorry, what's mine is mine and what yours is yours, says the Pirkei Avot, Harezu mida benoni. That's just a normal person. That's a regular human being. I have my stuff, you have your stuff, I'm good, right? However, Pirkei Avot continues, V'yesh omrim, some people say, the different view, a second view, which is often the case in the Mishnah, we have different views. Some people say that's not a normal thing. Harezu midat Sodom. That's the characteristic of the Sodomites. You know, Sodom and Gomorrah, that was one of the cities that were destroyed in Abraham's time because they were wicked people in the sense that they were completely selfish human beings. There was a law in Sodom that you weren't allowed to be hospitable. You weren't allowed to entertain guests. Right, all these kind of things, and they never gave. It was terrible, right? So therefore, the second opinion says, and they were evil, and they were eventually destroyed. So he says, if you have this philosophy of what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, that's actually like a Sodomite. So the commentaries ask the question. That's a very weird thing. You know, when we have many debates in the Talmud, different opinions, right? But they're normally within the same context. Like, it's unusual you should have a disagreement where there's two things that make no sense. No connection to each other. Why am I saying this? Because to say something is normal behavior and then to say something is sodomite behavior doesn't seem to make sense. Like, how can you interpret the same scenario with two complete opposite perspectives, right? Normal behavior means you're not a saint, but you're a normal guy. A sodomite means you're an evil person. How can there be two opinions on the same sentence? You have the question clear? In other words, so the person is what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. One opinion says that's a normal human being. Another person says that's a sodomite. He's like a terrible person, right? So I once had a beautiful interpretation, a bit of a twist on the words. Because the second opinion is introduced as yesh omrim, some say. So the answer goes like this. If you're a person and you're not a tzaddik, you're not a chassid, you're not a great pious person, and you know, you protect yourself a little bit, and that's fine, we all do. And what's yours is yours, and you don't want people intruding and invading. And you say what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. You know what the Pirkei Avot says about a chassid. You know we should be more selfless. We aspire every day to be a bit more humble, to be a bit more kind, to be a bit more charitable, generous, whatever the case is. But we also know our shortcomings. We have an animal soul and we have an ego. And okay, so you're a normal person. And because you know what the real aspiration is, once in a while you'll give away what belongs to you. Once in a while you'll make room for others. Once in a while you'll put others first, and you'll try. Which is what most of us do in everything, right? We never can be, there's only very few tzaddikim, as they say, right? There's only very few fully righteous people in the world. And that's the design of creation, that's fine. And if you behave that way, but you always remember that's not the ideal, the ideal is something much more than that, and you set yourself on a journey to aspire, you're a normal person. We have no complaints, normal person. You're growing, you're trying, you're aspiring. However, says the Pirkei Avot, v'yesh omrim doesn't mean another opinion. If you make that a philosophy, like you become, that's the thing you profess, that's the thing you teach, that's the thing you talk about the whole day, that what's mine is mine, like don't touch. And what, even though I acknowledge that what yours is yours, in other words, self-protection becomes a philosophy, that's a sodomite. Completely different. Is it just the way you live because you're a human being and you're normal, or is it a philosophy? Once it becomes a philosophy like it is today, it just becomes self-absorbed. And that's the thing. So what does that mean? How do we put this all together? So if we say we're born to be selfless, if we say we need to be selfless, but then we also say people-pleasing is not a good idea, so what does that mean? And also to not take care of yourself is also not a good idea. So what's the formula look like? So the formula looks like, I always love to give this analogy, I'm sure I've given it before, which is the analogy of an ambulance, right? How would you define an ambulance? A vehicle that helps other people, right? Rescues other people, is there for other people, to serve other people's needs in times of crisis, whatever the case is. It's to help others, right? Does an ambulance need petrol? Yeah. Does it have to sometimes not go and serve other people so it can get petrol? Yes. Right? Would anyone ever define an ambulance as a vehicle that needs petrol? It would be an absurdity. Mm-hmm. Right? That's not an ambulance. The ambulance needs petrol. But that's not how you define an ambulance. An ambulance, the definition of an ambulance is that it helps others. Once in a while, it will stop to get petrol. Once in a while, we will know that the medical force or whatever, the hospital, is down one ambulance because an ambulance has gone in for service, because otherwise it won't be able to function as an ambulance, right? Yes, so it needs petrol, needs to get service once in a while. It needs a fine tune-up, whatever it needs. I'm not a great mechanic, as you know, but whatever it needs, and it needs to have it. And if it doesn't do it, it's irresponsible because it won't be able to help other people. And that's the way... And that's the way a human being should aspire to be. Of course we need to be responsible. Of course we need to take care of ourselves. Why? Because we are born to be selfless. And mean we are born to be kind. Olam chesed yibaneh. We are born to help other people. If you're a wreck and you never slept in a week and you're not taking care of yourself, you won't be able to help anyone. Forget about yourself. You sure won't be able to help anyone, right? But self-care does not mean I put myself first, because that's actually not a way of living. I mean, we do that because we all got an ego, so we do that once in a while. But the aspiration of a human being needs to be, I'm there to help others. But the helping others in that context is not about people-pleasing. It's not about popularity, because again, about popularity means it's about me. I want to help other people because I want to be selfless. In other words, what's driving my... kindness is strength, not a weakness. People-pleasing is a weakness. Helping others is a strength. And because it's a strength, I also know how to say no. And I also know when I don't have to please someone else because it's against my values, or it's against the values of the morality of society, whatever the case is. I also know that when I help someone, it's got to be correct. It's got to be right. And it's got to be good kindness. But who am I as a person? How are we wired as a person? To go beyond ourselves, to grow. Grow means go beyond ourselves. Part of that means giving to others. It doesn't have to be money. It can be food. It can be generosity. It can be help. It can be support. It can be empathy. It can be compassion, whatever the case is. That's why people are born to have relationships. We know that, right? Lo tov v'yot ha'adam levado. God said it's not good for a person to be alone. And as we always translate, it's not good for a person to be lonely. Why? Because the healthy state of a person is to be in a relationship, right? It's to give. you know how far selfishness has become? It's something I only discovered later. I'm sorry, maybe it's just ignorance on my part. Because this came up at the Kiemet wellness retreat that we have, and we're having a discussion, and someone brought this. We're having a discussion on relationships, and this came up. For someone who's very secular, not connected that much with Jewish values, but just a normal human being. And she said that she just recently got married, and to her, it's was always a thing. Of course, once they get married, they're going to have children, because it's a great thing to have children. And then as she got older, she discovered among a circle of friends that today there's this discussion among young people who either do or don't get married about maybe not making a choice, maybe not to have children, which I find unbelievable. And then I discovered this is some, let me see if I remember it. My son told me this, that it's been around social media. This acronym about I forgot what it is. But it's a funny acronym, but it means like no children, more finance or something. Like we'll have more money for ourselves. First of all, practically, I don't know what these people are thinking. Like, I mean, there's going to come a time when you're going to need help. But anyway, it's so wired within human society to be able to give in that way. Now, unfortunately, God has other plans with people sometimes. Yes, there's infertility. There are people who weren't able to get married. There are people who weren't able to have children. That's true. But as a default, the world has become so self-absorbed in the name of self-care, in the name of myself and authentic self and all this rubbish, that they're now there are people that actively contemplate not having children, not even trying. Right? It's completely and it's not going to bring to any happiness because a person's not wired that way. We are wired to give. We are wired. Our default conscious self is not to give always, but because of our ego that blocks it, but that's who we really are. That's what our soul is. That should be driving everything. And that's the strength of the human being. The strength of the human being is to go beyond ourselves and to give to others, to make space for others. Now, in order to make space for others, we cannot be a shmata. We have to be a person. It has to be a person that gives, right? So of course, we have to take care of our health. We have to sleep. We have to socialize. We have to do things. You know, it's my famous thing. I've probably mentioned this 10 times. Gabo Mate, who I can't stand for many reasons now, but he's sort of including his anti-Israel stance. It goes together, by the way. It's all connected. I'll give a different share on that a different time. His wrong views on trauma and giving and self-preservation and care is all wrong. It's all got to do with his views in Israel. It works together, but not for now because we're running out of time. But so he has this thing about how you become a strong person, a healthy person, if you've been traumatized. How do you do it? You learn to say no. And he gives two options when you meet someone you haven't seen for a long time, you don't particularly like either, and they're so excited, so they ask you, want to go out for a coffee? See, this is the people pleaser. The weak person says yes, because, you know, you can't say no, because you say yes, even though you don't really like it. And the strong person says, no, doesn't work for me. You make up an excuse, I can't go there. And I've always wondered about the third one. He doesn't talk about the third one. The third one is the person who could say no, has the strength to say no, and decides, no, I'm going to say yes, because it's the right thing to do, because I'll make that person happy. Why shouldn't I make a person happy? If I can, maybe I can't. Maybe I've got such an important thing tomorrow that I really can't. Okay. But maybe I can make someone happy even when I don't. Maybe I can talk to a person for 5 minutes even though I really don't like them. Yeah. No one's asking you to like them, be their best friend, but you can make them happy. You can go out of yourself. It's all part of kindness, right? It's not self-care. I don't talk to that person. I don't feel safe, you know, all this kind of stuff today. All of a sudden, because they looked at me once wrong, then now I don't feel safe anymore around them or something like that. I don't know. They don't quite understood what that means, but that's the language that goes around, right? We are born to give. And that's why someone who's not a people pleaser, but he still doesn't overindulge in himself, right? And that's the sage of people pleasing. It's not really people pleasing. It's a whole different way of life. It's a life where I do consider others because I want to give, right? You consider it. You can say no, but you also make peace, and it's a good thing. You want people to be happy. You want to consider other people's feelings. You give a lot. You give of yourself, but you can say no. That's the test. The test is, where's your giving coming from? So therefore, we are born, olam chesed yibaneh, we are born to give. We are born to be selfless. But the selflessness is not a contradiction to self. In fact, the contrary. In order to be selfless, there has to be a self. So that there can be selflessness. But the self is not for the purpose of being self. I wasn't born for me to have a good time. God didn't create the world so that I can have a great time. That's not the purpose of creation. There's a greater plan, there's a greater mission, and there's greater values, and there's a greater purpose. And that's what we're born for. And part of that is to make room for others, make room for God, and make room for other people. It's a good reflection for the month of Elul, by the way. This is we haven't spoken that much about Elul yet, but Elul is a time of reckoning, a time of reflection. This is part of what it is. It's not about remembering everything I did every day, because most of us don't remember what we had for breakfast even this morning. Forget about yesterday, right? But it is about reflecting on how we're doing in the space of taming our ego a little bit. How we're doing in the space of going out of ourselves. Now again, sometimes it's a gray area. Sometimes, should I say yes? Shouldn't I say yes? It's a really good thing. It's a valuable thing. But I'm going to be compromising myself because I'm overextended. Okay, so that's something one has to work through. Sometimes work through with others. Sometimes talk to other people. Whatever the case is. But at the same time, the focus is not me. The focus is giving. The me is to fill up petrol. And that's okay. We're an ambulance. We are born to be ambulances in a positive sense. Right? We are born to give to others and help others and help and go beyond ourselves in generally. And of course, to that we have to be self. What's the test? If it's coming from a weakness or a strength, the test is that when it's not good and it's not appropriate, either because you need rest yourself or because you need to, or it's against values what you've been asked to do or help other people. It can be wrong. It can be forbidden. It can be just against our value. You can say no. Abraham Avinu himself, who was the epitome of selflessness, but from a strength, not from a weakness, told the angels when they came to visit, you must wash your feet before you come into my house. Why? Because I've shared this before, because in those days, part of the pagan worship was to serve the dust on your feet. And Avraham Avinu's value was, he was all about monotheism. Mm-hmm. And Avodah Zarah, idol worship, doesn't come into his home. So he ran, he was convalescing, he was recuperating from a major surgery, circumcision, at the age of 99. And he wanted guests. He was dying to get. He saw people and he ran. But he saw they looked like the natives over there. He looked like, says, Arabim, which is Arabs, but not Arabs in the modern sense, Arabs in that time. The indigenous people there, whatever. The people of the area who were pagan worshippers. And he saw a lot of dust on their feet. And he figured, well, he didn't know they were angels, but he figured they're idol worshippers. So he says, please, I want to give you a meal. Please come and rest up. I'll give you drink. I'll give you food. Just wash your feet before you come into my house. He was able to have that strength because he wasn't a people pleaser, but he was a giver, a selfless person. But a selfless person from a strength, and strength is a value, and therefore all the values have to be met. So that's the balance. So I don't know if that works, but selflessness is a good thing, but there's got to be a self for selflessness also. All right, see you next week again. And don't forget, in 2 weeks' time, a special one, pre-Rosh Hashanah.